Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Standing on My Soapbox, the weekly rant, rave, and review radio show where we talk all of the good, the bad, and the ugly of the past week's current events. Join your host, Scott Fullerton, and this week's special guest co-host,
singer-songwriter Tom Goss.
You're also invited to call in and stand on my soapbox with us. Call now at 347-989-0126 to join the conversation. Now, here he is, stepping up to the microphone, your host, Scott Fullerton.
Yay, so cheesy without music behind it and have musicians as a co-host today. I love it. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Standing on My Soapbox, where we talk about the week in pop culture, LGBT news, a little bit of politics, whatever we want, just kind of throw it in there for some fun. Today, I have one of my favorite people on the planet. He is the handsome and talented Tom Goss, my special co-host. His career as an out singer and songwriter by our LGBT community, some of the most fun and inspiring songs over a number of hugely successful albums he's created. Can't wait to talk about some new music videos. He had a trip to Toronto. Please welcome to the show, everyone, Tom Goss. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for standing up on my soapbox with me. How's everything out in beautiful downtown L.A.?
Well, I don't live downtown, but but it's great. I mean, actually, you know what? It's a little cloudy today, so it's probably only 65 and cloudy. So,
the one day it's not perfectly beautiful there. I gotcha.
No, it's funny. I forget that it's not the same weather all over the world. You know, when I travel, I just always like throw on a bunch of shorts and t-shirts, and then I'm like, oh shit. I'm going somewhere where it might actually,
daunting. I'm horrible. Yeah. Have you learned to pack light yet? I mean, you've been doing this forever. Are you still a heavy packer?
Oh, I mean, I've never been a heavy packer, but I mean, I go on tour for months at a time with a backpack. So, yeah, man, I got that taken care of.
Ah, gotcha. I'm horrible. I'm still an overpacker. Been traveling forever, a bit older than you, and I still pack way too much things. Like, well, I might want to go to the pool, but then it might be cold, so I better bring some long pants. And I have usually at least one full extra suitcase. It's pretty horrible. But
if you just wear Speedos, you know, the pool thing doesn't take up much space.
Well, there you go. I just need to fix what I'm wearing underneath. Good thought. See, that's what I need an extra traveler for.
Exactly.
All righty. Well, we're going to talk all about stuff. You've been a busy man, my friend. We'll go into all that in just a little bit. Let's jump into some of the things that are blowing up the internet today in what I'm seeing on there. We have two big things happening. Of course, Kathy Griffin. Did you see that little video that she put out?
I didn't see the video, but I saw the picture. Did she have a video?
She had a little making of video of it. It's kind of like she was doing a secret project, kind of made it a little macabre 30-second video before she showed the picture. So it kind of had a bit. I think that's why it got as much blowback as it did, besides just the picture. But yeah, had a whole little video involved.
I didn't see the video with the context. I just saw the picture.
Well, it's been blowing up the internet all over the news. Being condemned left, right, and center, which I think she should be. We'll talk about a little bit what your opinion is, what my opinion, but she has issued an apology I thought was very sincere, and I want to play that really quick for everyone. So this is Kathy Griffin talking about, and if you're not familiar with the story, Kathy Griffin put together with one of her friends a little, it was supposed to be a funny video, I'm up to something, ha ha ha, and then at the very end it shows a picture of her with an obvious fake Donald Trump head, like beheaded type thing. So not a great topic for humor all the time, but this is her apology. We'll talk about it on just the other side here.
Hey everybody, it's me, Kathy Griffin. I sincerely apologize. I am just now seeing the reaction of these images. I'm a comic. I cross the line. I move the line. Then I cross it. I went way too far. The image is too disturbing. I understand how it offends people. It wasn't funny. I get it. I've made a lot of mistakes in my career. I will continue. I asked your forgiveness, taking down the image, going to ask the photographer to take down the image, and I beg for your forgiveness. I went too far. I made a mistake, and I was wrong. Hey, everybody.
So what do you think?
Hey, everybody. It's me, Kathy Griffin.
There we go. I can't stop my audio. I have repeat. So what do you think of the whole thing? What are your thoughts on this, Tom?
I mean, look, I mean, I'm an artist, and I understand both sides of the issue. I understand it as an artistic and political statement. But I do think it's a little much. You know, I think that there was a lot of, you know, you can look at it from the other side, and there was plenty of people depicting, you know, Obama being lynched or something like that. And I
right.
think for the most part, the left was fairly riled up as a result of that, with all the racial and political undertones or overtones, really, it's fairly blatant. And I don't think that you should have a double standard about that kind of thing, you know, just because you think Trump is horrible. Well, those people thought Obama was horrible. You know what I mean?
Right.
So to depict our president kind of beheaded and bloodied, I see it as an artistic statement, an artistic and political statement. And in that regard, I think, okay, cool. That's the risk that you're taking. But you know, I don't think that we should be treating one another like that.
No, I agree 100%. I think it was in very bad taste. I don't think, especially, I mean, we still got to remember that, I always forget all the time, that he has like an 11-year-old son at home too. So he still has a young kid. We think of all of his adult kids all the time. But I wouldn't want my 11-year-old son as any public person or anything with that kind of picture being put out there on the internet. So I think it was pretty tacky and should not have been done. But like you said, on the artistic standpoint, I mean, she's had a casino appearance canceled. She's had a line she was endorsing canceled, and she's been fired from CNN's New Year's Eve, which she's done for the last 7 years. So now Kathy Griffin, if you know her at all, followed her at all, she does not apologize. She's always over the top, always over the line. And she never apologizes ever, because she never thinks that she's gone over the top. She went, that was a 30-second apology. She knows she went over the line there, and she apologized for it. So I don't think it should ruin her career. I think she'd be condemned for it. Like I said, she is an artist, so she does make statements. This is something that she's done in the past. She stepped over the line. I think she did realize it, and I think it kind of it's had its day. I think kind of got over it, but there's a lot of different sides to it. Very interesting. Interesting conversation.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting. I often wonder, you know, I mean, I guess when I spend too much time trying to make sure that my artistic expression is universal in terms of that it can be seen by everybody, and although I know people are offended by a lot of the stuff I do, there's no malintent. You know, I think there's certainly malintent with this display. And I think that's the difference. I mean, I'm sure that there's rationale for it, and maybe if there was I didn't watch the video, so maybe there was a political statement in some context that I'm not understanding. But you know, I think for the most part, the intent was to be harmful and to be derogatory, and to
right.
And to cause a really negative reaction by millions and millions of people. And then when she got that negative reaction, she pulled back. But that's what she wanted. You know, I don't deny her apology, but she certainly did want that. You know, she wanted the attention and the divisiveness.
And like I said, that has been her modus operandi. She does do shock value for sake of shock value. And she knew this would definitely be shock value to what you're saying. So, yeah, she knew exactly it was going to cause some degree of uncomfortableness. She didn't know how much. I think she knew how far she went over the line at the time. But it was definitely uncalled for, I thought. But, yeah, we'll see how quickly this blows over. Like I said, she's lost 3 gigs from it so far. We'll see what happens down the road. I think she'll bounce back from it. Her fans are pretty steadfast, but hopefully she'll learn a good lesson out of it as well. And then the other thing blowing up my internet and Twitter feeds today is Trump's tweet the other night with his Covfefe or something, whatever it is. I don't even know how to pronounce it. He did some tweet, and then at the end, after a couple of spaces, he put Covfefe with no explanation around it. And the internet just blowing up, making memes about it all over the place. making it a designer bag or what it might mean. And it's kind of cracking me up. Have you seen anything on it at all yet?
No, I have not. What was the spelling again?
It's really bizarre. It's COVFEFE, so Cove Fifi. Hmm. No idea.
And
did he
hashtag it?
He didn't hashtag it. It was just at the end of the everyone's. I mean, it looks like he might was trying to write something and it was a misspell on the thing, but it's just bizarre because it's there by itself. There's like a couple spaces before it from what he said, and I'll try to look up real quick and see if I can find out what it said. But it was like in no context with what he was talking about, and then the internet is just the memes have gone crazy, and then of course Sean Spicer, the soaps person who is kind of a dweeb to begin with, he's doing a press conference today. And he makes it worse by, he says, well, there is a small group of people who knows exactly what he meant. So we thought it was just a mistake, was making fun of it because it was a mistake. Now Sean adds fire to the, or oil to the fire, and says, well, he knew what he was saying.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like I don't put too much thought into Donald Trump's tweets.
I don't pay attention to him until they hit the internet like crazy. And he's even made fun of it himself. He says, I guess they took it down after like 6 hours, so I can't find the exact thing. But then he wrote a couple hours ago, figure out the true meaning of Kofi, ? Enjoy. And so he's making fun of it himself. But it's just like Tony Tripoli, who's a great friend of the show and comedian in L.A., and he's a good friends with best friends with Joan Rivers and open for her, and he's one of the producers of Fashion Police, and he would just go into town as he does when he gets on things, and I was just kind of dying. Let me see if I can pull some of those up real quick. He's got all right, here we go. Man, he cracks me up. He's got now I can't find it all of a sudden. What is it? Where'd it go? Here it is. Okay. There will be so many Starbucks cups that say Kofif today. And I'll pronounce it Kofif. He says, I bet you look, if you look at the tag of Frankie Grande's romper, the designer is Kofif of Cincinnati. Rachel Dolezal, African name, Kofifi. It's pretty funny. He's been kind of going crazy. Kofifi 69 was ironically Hillary's private server password. So it just made the internet go crazy. It's kind of fun.
That's funny.
I do like it, I have to admit.
Yeah, part of me feels like that you know, the Trump administration is just like so brilliant at trolling everybody all the time. And it doesn't really matter kind of what it is. So if this was real, then it's trolling us because, you know, it's an inner circle thing. But the odds are good that it's not even a thing at all, and now they're just trolling us in that regard. And we're all talking about it. We're talking about it right now. The internet's blowing up about it. Everybody's paying attention to it, but it doesn't mean anything, which then leads me to the question, like, okay, what are we not paying attention to, you know?
Right, exactly. What is he trying to deflect us from now? Because he is such a master deception. I'm like, okay, look at this shiny thing over here, so you forget about what I did yesterday. So you're very
and everybody falls for it over and over again. Like, we're just being trolled nonstop.
Crazy stuff. What else happened? Oh, I just read, and I'm kind of excited about this personally, and because I have a whole thing about dance. I'm a huge dance fan. I don't know about you, but I love So You Think It Can Dance. I love that. I don't watch Dancing with the Stars that much, but I like dance in general. And they're bringing So You Think You Can Dance back for a 14th season this year. It starts in like 2 weeks. So I'm really excited about that. And in fact, I interviewed the very first winner of the competition, Nick Lazzarini. He's going to be my guest on the Tuesday's show at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But it's funny. They're bringing back for a one night only in your neck of the woods there, the cast of the 80s TV show Fame. They're reuniting for a one-night-only concert. So they're bringing Debbie Allen and Cynthia Gibb and Jesse Borrego and all these people that were in the original TV series. Did you ever see the TV series of Fame or watch the movie?
Never once.
You are a young buck. I keep forgetting. That's okay. It was old. It was like 1980s, 1990s. I don't remember what it was. But Fame was like the flash dance or the glee of its time. Kind of like the glee of its time, I'd have to say. It's like a performing arts high school in New York City where they had all these really talented people in there, except instead of just singers, they had dancers and singers and all this other thing. So think Glee 1980s style.
Sounds so great. I hope there are a lot of leg warmers.
We can only hope. But it's going to have a big one night only, and they're benefiting the Actors Fund, which is always nice. But I thought that was kind of cool today for us older folks who remember the 80s sitcoms of the day. But yeah, it was lots of fun stuff. What's been on your radar? Anything fun and exciting that you're going over lately?
Yeah, I mean, I was just up in Toronto for a premiere of a movie called Hooked, which is Max Emerson wrote it and produced it of Instagram fame, and I scored the movie, so I wrote all the music for the movie, and that was really an exciting and challenging project for me this fall, and so it was really great to see it actualized and to go up to Toronto. And to go to the premiere and to hear all the music in the film and to see how it sits in the context of the theater. So I was really, really excited about that. And that was super fun.
Congratulations. Now, was that the world premiere then? The first time it's been shown anywhere?
It was the world premiere. Yeah.
Wow.
And I didn't even, I know. I didn't know anything about it until about a week ago. And I luckily saw an Instagram post or something, and I had a couple flexible days in my schedule. I didn't have a bunch on the books, so I flew up there, and I was really happy I did. It was a really great time.
How fun is that? Now, was the cast and the crew of it surprised you were there?
Well, a bunch of folks. You know, so the cinematographer came up, Max came up, who's the writer and the director. The producer came up, the star of the film came up. And
nice.
That was great.
Give us a quick recap. What it's about. Came.
So Hooked is about gay homeless youth. So it tells the story of Tom, who are in a relationship, but they live in a shelter in New York City. And Jack is a prostitute. That's how they're surviving. And it kind of follows his story as he meets one of his Johns, who then attempts to help him, and they go to Miami. But he's also got borderline personality disorder, which makes his life fairly challenging for those around him. His behavior is fairly erratic, so causes a lot of drama. So like gay homeless hooker with borderline personality disorder, and the adventures they have in New York and Miami. I guess is an interesting short description of it.
Wow, what's it like to score something like that? Do you see individual scenes, or do you get to see the whole movie? And how does that process work for you?
Well, you know, I'd never scored a movie before, so the process for me was a process of trial and error. And so I got the whole movie. You know, I started with rough cuts, you know, before it got locked. And then we talked about scenes which he wanted music in, and then I would watch those scenes over and over again and just kind of feel them out and start to and music would kind of start. It's hard to explain because in many ways it's like staring at a blank canvas and figuring out what goes there. You know what I mean?
Gotcha. Okay.
So we talk about sounds and ideas, and we talk a lot about themes, and then, you know, as you kind of get into it, it gets a little more and more obvious. But there's some scenes where it's going to have like a Latin dance flavor, and there's scenes where it's going to be like an acoustic guitar and a piano beautifully talking back and forth to each other. So it just kind of depends on the situation, and I wish I could explain how songwriting happens. But it's still always such a shocking surprise to me that anything comes out of me. Like, wow, that's cool.
Did you like the experience, though? Would you do it again for another film?
Absolutely. I liked it. It was really challenging. And I think it really challenged me as an engineer, as a producer, and as an arranger, because it was, you know, essentially I'm playing all the instruments. And so it's me behind a computer screen trying to figure out how to make this Latin pop flavor thing, you know, with you know, ukuleles and guitars and drums and this. And then in the next scene, I'm trying to figure out how to make like this ambient synth glass, you know, dramatic dark sound. So it's, you know, so it was definitely a challenge as an engineer and a producer, and I appreciated it.
Wow, that sounds amazing. Can't wait for it to get wider release. That'll be something to look for. And it's called Hooked, you said?
It's called Hooked, yep. Mm-hmm.
All right, super. Well, let's take a quick little break. We'll play one of your songs now. We're going to play All My Life, one of my favorite songs. We're talking
okay.
to singer-songwriter Tom Goss. He's standing on my soapbox, talking about all things going on in pop culture and LGBT news and politics this week. If you want to call in and talk to us, give us a call, 347-989-0126. Don't be shy. I see a bunch of you out there. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. Here's Tom Goss with All My Life.
All my life, I said goodbye to that I know to the truth. But you're my life, so wild I try to hold on to you. When we first kissed, lying side by side, I'll always deny it, but I was crying. You held me tight. All my life, I said goodbye to that I know.
Soapbox today with singer-songwriter Tom Goss. That is the song All My Life. Guys, so excited here to talk to Tom. You're going to be playing Pride. We got Pride Month starting tomorrow. Tomorrow is June 1st. I can't believe we're in the sixth month already. Are you
That's
ready for
crazy.
Pride season?
Yeah, I'm ready. I can't wait.
And you got a gig or two to play?
Yeah, I'm heading down in a couple of weeks and heading to Springfield, Missouri to play Ozark Pride, which I'm really excited about, which I believe is the 17th. And then I'm also playing in Roanoke, but that's in September. You know, there's a couple outliers that are playing in the fall or the spring, you know?
Nice. Yeah, we had going next 4 weeks I booked. I have Cleveland this Saturday, and then I go to Pittsburgh after that. And then I'm going to Columbus after that. Then I'm back to Cleveland. Cleveland split themselves into two parades this year. So I don't know how it's going to go over. But it's kind of
strange. Tell me about that.
It's really strange. Pittsburgh or Cleveland Pride has been put on at the same location, same place by the same group every year. Or I think it's like 18 years or something, 17 years, long time. Big event, big parade, ends at what they call Voinovich Park right down on Lake Erie. And it's a nice secluded area where it could be kind of all – it's right at the edge of a pier type thing, so you have your own place there. So it's really cool. Well, last year, it kind of really fatally, they canceled it 2 weeks before Pride. And it was kind of really strange the way they did it. No one really knew what was going on. They canceled it because of fear, because Pulse had happened and all this other stuff, right? It was like 2 weeks after Pulse. And they canceled like two or three days after Pulse and said they were concern for security because they're having a new location this year because the waterfront park they usually have it at was being renovated. And so they were afraid of security and just didn't want to do it. But it was just a very weird thing because the timing was so close to it. And Cleveland had just done the Republican National Convention.
Game.
So they had plenty of security, no problem, not one problem with the entire Republican convention. With Trump of all people. And so it just seemed really weird. No one really knew what was going on. They weren't really answering any questions from it, the Pride Committee. So the Pride Center, the Cleveland Youth Pride Center in Cleveland, they decided they were going to try to put it on. And they whipped up together some sponsors real quick and put a Pride festival on and a parade in 2 weeks' time. Right in downtown square in the middle of Cleveland. And it was a great event. I actually went for it. And they put a parade together. They came over the big Cleveland Bridge there. We were right in the middle of town square. We had probably, it wasn't like, because it was so quick together, I think it was like three food booths and maybe 15 or so vendors groups with, I think the Cleveland Gay Chorus was there and a bunch of organizations. And then a couple of people selling some cool Pride stuff. But actually came together really good and had such a good time. So now we're this year, and Lee was so happy with what they did. The center was so good, they wanted to redo it again this year. They didn't know it was happening with the other group because they hadn't said anything since they canceled last year. So they put up their announcement, and a week after this group put up their announcement, the old Pride group put up an announcement they're having one at the end of the year, end of the month.
So, but they're 2 weeks apart from one another?
So they're apart. One's a third, one's a 20. They're 3 weeks apart from each other, but still close enough for it's crazy.
And are they both calling themselves Cleveland Pride?
One's calling himself Clee Pride, and one's calling himself Cleveland Pride. They're both having parades, which is very weird. Cleveland Pride is the one that canceled, the one that had all the money usually from sponsors, everything. They're bringing, I think they're bringing like Taylor Dane or something. They're bringing a couple music acts. The other one's put together is more local acts. It's kind of a hometown feel, which I personally like a little bit, even though I'd love to see some more name acts come out there. So it's just really weird. They're now going against themselves for Pride. I don't like it that much. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, that sucks.
I'm going to both just to see what happens, but it's going to be definitely interesting. I was like, Pittsburgh is a great Pride, and Columbus, last year we had 400,000 people come to Columbus Pride. So.
Yeah, I was there last year.
You were Columbus Pride last year?
Columbus Pride last year, yeah.
Why do I not remember that? I remember Trey Pearson. I remember Liberty Deep Down Band or something. I can't believe I didn't remember you were there.
I know, I'm very hurt by that.
I feel bad all the time. I'm going to smack myself aside the head here.
That's okay.
But it was a pretty good Pride, isn't it? Columbus does a good job.
Yeah,
out there.
It was a They did a good job. Yeah, they do a real good job.
It's a huge park.
I think it's the biggest one in the Midwest, right?
It is. It is the biggest one.
Chicago.
Outside of Chicago.
Yeah.
Instead of Chicago, it's the second biggest. So, yeah, it's pretty huge.
Yeah.
Then, of course, we have the anniversary of Pulse on the 12th. So that's going to be kind of a sad day. But there are a lot of people memorializing that. Do you remember when Pulse happened, what you were doing last year?
That's a really good question. Yeah, I was in Minneapolis. I was on tour and I was in Minneapolis. And yeah, it just sucked. I remember I had a show that night. And I talked, well, I guess it's hard because it happened late. So I guess
right.
I probably didn't know until the morning. So I didn't have a show the same night, but I had a show the next night in Minneapolis, and we talked a little bit about it. And I learned a song. There's this wonderful trans artist by the name of Nomalee Brennett.
Mm-hmm.
And she's one of my heroes, one of my songwriting heroes, too. And she wrote this song called Bleecker Street a couple years ago. You remember when those people were getting, there was like three different incidences on Bleecker Street, like right in the village of people like.
I do remember that, yeah, New York City, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really, really rough. And she wrote this song called Bleecker Street, which was on her last record. It's just so poignant. And I was going to write a song or something like that, but I kind of honed in on this song and I realized that she'd already said all the things that I wanted to say in a way that was probably much more poignant than I was going to be able to do it. So I learned the song. I learned her song, did my own version of her song, made a video and then performed that for a little bit, in honor.
That's great. That had to be a powerful evening. We got a caller. Let's see who called in here.
Sure.
Caller, well, thanks for standing on our soapbox. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Larry.
Hi, Larry. How you doing?
Hey, Larry.
Good, good. I have a question for Tom.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure I'm going to answer your question, Larry. I feel like you're trying to cause trouble here.
Hey, Tom, I'd like you to tell us a little bit about how you feel like your music has evolved since you started singing.
Ooh, good question.
In terms of what, Larry? In terms of I guess
has it evolved in terms of the way the subjects you focus on or your style? Do you think that's evolved at all?
I mean, I think everything's evolved. I think it's funny sometimes I listen to, old songs or, I was submitting for some licensing stuff, which is like placing songs in movies and giving some songs to people. And sometimes it's even, and I think this is probably true for any artist, it's hard to listen to any of your old stuff. And I think in me last week listening to a lot of the old stuff, I've realized just how much my sound and particularly my voice has evolved. I think that, I've become a much, much more concise and clear and direct writer. But I think probably what was most prevalent in me listening to old recordings and listening to current recordings is that my voice, and I don't mean my literal voice, I mean my narrative voice and my artistic voice is much more clear. I think there are a lot of moments over my career where I'm trying to be somebody or trying to achieve a particular sound rather than just settling into the most authentic sound that I have. And I think these days, in terms of my writing and in terms of my actual voice, I'm a lot more authentic in my presentation. And I think that's probably the best evolution. It's allowed me to also experiment with different instruments and with different sounds without abandoning who I am. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. Sure. It's interesting for you to say that you're being more authentic because you always struck me as incredibly authentic.
What was one of your first favorite songs of Tom, Larry? What got you started listening? Do you remember your first one you listened to?
I listened to all of his songs for a really long time, but I guess I really liked gosh, there's so many. That song, though, is it, was it Like a Dog?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that song.
Okay.
There's a chuckle on there. There's got to be a like story a behind that song somewhere.
No, I think it's really really original and really fun. And, you know, it's just, he's got such a great narrative voice.
Thanks, Larry.
I think he's amazing. I think you're amazing, Tom.
Larry has heard my music from before anybody else had heard my music. So it doesn't surprise me that a song he chose is a deep cut off my first record, which I feel like very few people would ever reference anyway. So I appreciate that. But I'm only laughing because it's such an obscure song to reference. I would be interested to listen to that song, you know, which is now almost a dozen years old, recorded right now, and have some context into what he's hearing, because I would probably just trash it.
Larry, thanks so much for calling in. We appreciate you being a true fan.
Thanks a lot.
There.
Thanks, Tom. Hey, Tom, good job, man.
Thanks, Larry.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, he's got to be a true fan if he can repeat the oldies, huh?
Yeah, no, it's funny. I probably haven't even thought of that for like 10 years. But yeah, for sure.
Well, you are, and it's funny because you have had such a long career. When you say like all the albums you've created, and you're still a relatively young guy, you are a young guy. So it's like it's got to be. Does it feel strange to you how long you've been in the business?
Yeah. You know, honestly, it does sometimes. I mean, it's a little of both sides, because I can't sometimes believe that I am as old as I am. you know, I don't feel as old as I am, but at other times I'm just really proud of the fact that I've endured, you know, for so long. And I say endured only because being an independent musician is a very difficult job.
Sure.
I think people think that there's like teams of people constantly working for me, or people writing my songs or editing my videos or doing these kind of booking my shows. And the fact of the matter is it's kind of all me. And so every single day I'm forced with, you know, I wake up and I'm forced with the decision of, do I do this for another day, or do I just kind of like throw in the towel? And I'm still doing it, so that is.
Well, we appreciate it. But I was talking to someone the other day, though. Really, when you get to your level, it really is like a business. When you're a singer songwriter, promoting yourself, you create your own music videos, you're doing all those stuff. It's, you really have to have that business sense, because you are the business, right?
Well, yeah, it's absolutely a business, and it's funny. I mean, I don't think the world sees it as such a lot of times. I mean, I remember, you know, talking to my family sometimes, and they'll be like, I'm thinking about starting a business. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And they'll be like telling me about the business, and I'll have some insights about the business, and they'll be kind of like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I've been running a business for a dozen years now. Like a successful business that's still running, you know, it's after 12 years, that's a successful business. And they're like, what do you mean? Like, sometimes they're just like, face to the palm, like, what do you think that I do every single day in my life, you know? But it absolutely is a business, and that can be hard. It can be hard because, you know, you have an idea of what your value is as an artist, but then you also have to then sell your value as a commodity, and that can be a difficult challenge to
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. I was talking, I had Mike Manning on the other day. He's got famous, internet famous for being on The Real World, MTV's Real World in D.C., and has gone on to be such an incredible producer and actor. And but he went to business school, and he was in college in Colorado Business School before he went to acting, and it served him well. He went directly from making his first movie to using that
money in the thought about it turning into be an executive producer in a lot of projects. And it really does help. But like you, like exactly what you said, you're not only the business behind the side, but you're the actual, the commodity, you're the product as well as the business. So it's kind of,
which
kind
is
of,
oftentimes in direct conflict of one another, right? Because the
right.
greatest, the greatest artistic product is not necessarily going to be the greatest business decision. So you really have to weigh those options carefully. It's like, am I feeding my artistic soul here, or am I making a decision that's best for my pocketbook? You know, you have to, you really have to balance that line and try to find the projects that accommodate both.
I love that. Such a great point. Now let's get into the business. You just spent about 2 or 3 days working your little bunnies off, putting a couple of music videos together. Was it one music video, or were you putting together a couple at the same time? Because you were in so many costume changes. I'm confused.
Oh, you don't even know. So yes, I'm in the process. I'm in post-production on what will be the first choose-your-own-adventure music video, which is not a – it's hard to explain because it's not a music video. It's I've literally built a matrix, an entire world of music video that then points to one another and connects to one another. So if you're thinking of this in terms of how most people think of storytelling and like a linear storytelling, you're only getting a piece of the picture. Because at any point in time, there's five splits in the music video where you can choose to continue on the story that you're on, or you can choose to move laterally into another story altogether. So altogether, if you think of it in kind of linear storylines, there's 12 distinct main characters and 12 distinct storylines. And but what that ends up being is 53 independent music videos that then all talk to one another and create one cohesive unit. So I'm in the process of editing 53 videos right now, and then
bless you, my child.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really complicated, and I mean, it's cool. I mean, it's a really great idea, and you know, we pitched YouTube, and it kind of went up the ladder, and they really loved the idea, and they gave us a ton of space and a ton of support, and they have been for a while. And so I'm really grateful for that. So everybody's really stoked about this project that we're taking on, and I feel like it's beautiful, and I finished the first rough draft on every video except for the credit videos. So that's really exciting. I'm starting to actually see it now, and it looks really beautiful. But it'll be interesting to see how people respond to something this different and this creative and something that's never been done before. Even the song in and of itself changes. So certain palettes, you'll hear a certain song. And other paths, you'll hear a totally different song. So it really benefits the viewer or the listener that's excited about it and going to go back and watch a totally different storyline and hear, and you know, they'll be rewarded by hearing a totally different song.
I love that. I forgot all about that, because that's what we talked about last time you were on, and when you were filming it, I don't know why it totally slipped my mind. I thought, I must be doing at least 2 or 3 different videos, because I saw all your costume changes and your character changes, because of course I'm a huge follower in social media. I had forgot that this was the make your own story project, but I can't believe that seems like it was only like 3 or 4 weeks ago. You've already have first draft edit on all of those videos already. That's amazing.
Yeah. We shot about 2 weeks ago. Yeah. It's been a lot. It's been, you know, a little bit of plugging me every day, trying to not be overwhelmed by the sheer quantity of the project. But yeah, no, it looks really, really good. It's really exciting. I don't know how many costume changes I have. Let me think about it. It would be, it would probably be about 20. I probably have about 20 different costumes, because I'm not any of the main characters. That's the funny thing. I'm just kind of this like little elfie thing that shows up in the stories on occasion that you kind of see in the background. And it's just kind of funny that, like, I'm the sidekick in a lot of ways, you know, that's kind of moving you through the story and helping you see the story and helping you understand what you have to do.
Oh, I can't wait for this now. Oh my goodness, this is going to be so amazing. You are nothing if not complex, my friend. We'll put it at that. Because you do work hard for your fans, which I love.
Thank you.
Oh, another thing I want to bring up for pop culture today, too, real quick. We'll go off track for 1 second. Speaking
sure.
of some of my favorite singers, Olivia Newton-John announced today that she has breast cancer's come back. So she canceled some tour dates. And a really good friend of the show, Randy Slovacek, who does the Randy blog. And if you're not following that, please go to www.therandyreport.com. This blog, he does great pop culture and politics. And his husband, Michael, is Olivia's publicist. So they've been great friends for like years, all of them. And I just want to give a big shout out to both of them, because I know they're worried about her. And a big shout out to Olivia, who's done such great work with it. She's created this entire hospital in Australia, which she goes and supports year after year with a big, that was just a couple months ago, I think. But we want to let Olivia Newton-John know she's in our hearts, and we're thinking about her as she battles breast cancer one more time. She has that amazing attitude that she always has, that she's going to be back on tour in a couple of months. She just canceled the next 2 months' worth. She's going to have a photon cancer treatment. So it sounded very Star Trek to me, but she knows what's going on because she's been part of the forefront of it in her hospital in Australia. So I wanted to give her a big shout out before I forgot on that.
Yeah, I never heard it. Photons?
It's photon. You know how they usually have chemo? It's like a photon chemo something, or a laser surgery or something. I saw it in her press release today. And I thought, wow, that sounds so Star Trek. I love it. But yeah, she created this hospital in a state-of-the-art hospital in Australia, or native Australia. And if she's confident, I'm confident for her. So that's, you have to have that good attitude anyway. So good on her for that.
Yeah, that's great. That's not that she has cancer, but that she has confidence.
Cancer sucks, as they say.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, we have a couple of minutes here. And what else do we want to talk about? We talked about Pride. Oh, speaking of Pride Month, June 11th, it's a Sunday, and it's going to be a big protest march all across the country. So check in your local community. I know that LA Pride is during theirs, the protest march this year. It's going to be a huge march on Washington that day. I think Atlanta. I know about 8 different states that are doing it. We're putting together a small one here in Northeast Ohio. So June 11th, look for that in your community. It's going to be a protest march for all the things that are happening in Washington right now. They're kind of trying to roll back all the advances we made over the last 8 years. So take your time, look into your community, see if you want to go to something. Washington, D.C. is going to be a huge march. L.A. is going to be huge. New York's going to be huge. And it's going to be something we need to keep our voices out there. And another thing I want to thank you about, your voice is so strong, Tom. Your last video, of course, talking about our LGBT elders was amazing. We'll play out with that in a little bit. But it's so important to kind of remember all the different parts of our community, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like you've been so such a great advocate in all your songs for different parts of the community, where you've been able to have some fun with it and bring awareness to it. What have you seen as a 12-year musician going to all these different places of Pride? You've been from big cities to small cities. What have you seen over the past 12 years, kind of an evolution in the LGBT landscape?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's as clear cut as that. I mean, I think there's been plenty of really positive evolutions, and I think there's been some that are kind of setbacks as well. I think, you know, I think my career didn't exist 12 years ago. You know, somebody like me couldn't have existed 12 years ago. And I think in terms of from the artistic perspective, from what I do, it's been really interesting to see how these days and age, probably in the past 2, 3, 4, 5 years, the thing that I do being kind of accepted and understood as something that exists in the world. And I think also that probably coincides with the greater population, the greater American population, kind of understanding that gay people exist, and they deserve the same kind of rights as everybody else. And I think that those two things kind of coincide with one another, kind of an assimilation in a way. And I think that assimilation has also come with its own struggles in terms of, you know, we see a lot more representation in kind of media and in mainstream culture, but a lot of that representation is whitewashed in the way that you kind of, I guess, ease things in. You know, I think I'm using probably the wrong words here, but hopefully that's what's going on and I think now they're starting to tell a lot more stories about LGBT people of color and trans men and women, and I think that's really great. But I think you're seeing it, you know, there was this really interesting story about these gay bros in Washington, D.C., that were kind of unapologetic about, you know, being white and affluent and Republican. I'm not actually sure if they're Republican, so maybe I shouldn't say that. But they only really wanted to hang out with people of their own kind. You know what I'm saying? So, as a result of us kind of becoming more accepted by the population as a whole, I think more people, but some people are finding it easier to be discriminatory of one another because there's so many different places and where you can fit in. Whereas before we all had to pull together, men and women and black and white and trans and gay, because we were the only people that we had. You
right.
understand what I'm saying? Does that
sure,
make sense?
No.
And now that it's kind of like more accepted and there's more spaces in which you can feel at home, you know, we're becoming a little more isolated in terms of our gender, our ethnic, or our socioeconomic status.
Right. And I think that's an important point, too, because there is – if once we start – closing in on ourselves and separating amongst ourselves, that's when we really kind of are going to stop growing as a community and taking those back seats to it. It took us, just think how long it took us to really be accepted of the transgender community and bisexual community is still kind of edited out to some degree.
For
and
sure.
It's more important than ever that we kind of stick together. And like you said, people of color, it's so important that with everything that's been happening just in the world in general, that we really kind of stick to our own instead of dividing each other. So, well said.
And you mentioned something about like big prides versus little prides, and I still find it really, you know, I love smaller prides. I find it really rewarding to go to smaller prides because everybody's there. You see the young
right.
and the old and the black and the white and the trans and the straight, you know, you see the allies. And when you go to the bigger prides, you can definitely see the segments playing out in front of you. And I think there's something really beautiful about a small town pride where you can see, oh, this is how it used to be. And there's something really valuable about this that we don't want to lose.
Right. Well, I'll talk to you off air. I mean, I'm helping out with our Youngstown Pride is actually been going for 9 years, but it's still very small.
Wow.
I don't think we get over 4,000 to 5,000 a year. And it started out at like 800 to 1200 the first 3 to 4 years. But we have now the mayor is doing an opening proclamation for it. We're doing a parade this year. But it's tough too, because you want to celebrate the community. It's hard to get the money still in the community to bring top name acts. Like I was talking about, I'd like to bring you and some different comedians out there. We're just starting to get to that point, but it is kind of cool to see a community like Youngstown is good burbs area. I mean, we have about 67,000 people in the main city and then all the little burbs around it. But to do something for 9 years and to really have the community pop out for it, it's kind of nice to see people that you didn't really know before. The younger community is coming out a little more proudly earlier, I guess. That's kind of one of the biggest changes to me, to see how many people under 25 are so open and able to come out right at 18, 19, 20 anymore, instead of coming out when you're 24, 27, college age. So it's been kind of cool to see.
Sure. When is your pride?
Ours is July 29th. We're doing it late this year. So it's yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. I'm doing the ad book this year. I'm trying to raise money to get an act here, like I told you a month ago. So I haven't had much luck at it yet. We're having trouble getting sponsors. We're lucky just to we pay for ourselves each year, which is we have a small little budget for it. But it's really kind of nice the way the community does come together and we're at least able to get what we need to do. We have lots of vendors come out. We have lots for our small of area. We actually have 3 LGBT bars. We have a P flag. We have a center. We have a transgender group. So we have a pretty good support group for as small of area as we are, which is kind of cool. I was the chairman of the Pride Center here for 3 years. That's how I first kind of got really involved and why I decided to do this radio show was I just loved our activism that we were trying to, I was seeing things turn around and it's kind of cool to see in the small Midwestern towns. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's great. So I have a question. Like Youngstown, what is Youngstown the Midwest? Like, where does the Midwest start? Is
Youngstown
the Midwest?
Is
so close to Pittsburgh.
Midwest. Ohio in general is called Midwest, but Youngstown is like 11 miles from the Pennsylvania border, which starts northeast.
Yeah.
So we're really, really close to northeast on Youngstown side. But Ohio in general, like Columbus and Toledo, it's all considered Midwest.
I agree with that. But the weird thing is I don't really consider Detroit. Like, I kind of sometimes think of, like, east of Detroit, but then Cleveland's east of Detroit. I don't know.
Exactly.
The whole Rust Belt area, like, confuses me.
it's real strange. I mean, it was when I first moved here, like I said, I told you I was a California boy for 29 years.
Yeah.
I've been here 15 years now. So it was real different knowing what was what. And I saw the same thing. It's like, well, I'm right next to Pennsylvania. I'm 3 hours into Canada and Toronto and Buffalo and Niagara Falls, and I'm still Midwest. I don't understand that, but it's crazy.
It's a little confusing. That area is a little murky.
And it's flat here, so I don't know how to get around because I was being born and raised in L.A., we have the mountain range there, right? So you always know where north is.
Yeah.
Here I never know where frickin' north is unless I can find the sun. If it's directly overhead at noon or something, I'm screwed. I have no idea how to get anywhere. It's a terrible
Funny.
Well, we have a little game we've been playing the last 6 weeks here. People are really enjoying it and getting lots of letters for it and different people. We've been recasting because everyone's being recast these days. We have Roseanne coming back next year to TV. One Day at a Time is coming back. All these old classic sitcoms and dramas. Dynasty is coming back to the CW. So we've been recasting old television shows here on Standing on My Soapbox just for some fun pop culture things to do. And today I'm up there on social media recasting for Everybody Loves Raymond, which hasn't been off the air too long, but it has a strong popular class that people identify to. I've had some great people write in for different things. Did you set up a new cast for it, Tom? Did you have time?
No, I didn't even know that was supposed to. I must have missed that part of the email. But
that's okay.
So are we recasting it with people that we know or like different celebrity type people?
It can be anything you want to do. We've been really fun. I've had a couple things. Last year or last week, we did The Facts of Life. And we had some people recast it all as all black, with the 2D person being white. That's the only one there. So we've had some real creative things. I had a couple weeks ago, we did Charlie's Angels. And it turned out that someone used the cast of Big Desperate Housewives, three different to recast things. So you can do, there's no rules. You can recast it.
Okay,
anything you want.
Yeah, so I'm gonna flip it. I'm gonna flip it up. So I'm gonna have like Betty White as the mother. You know,
love that.
The kind of like the overbearing mother, and then Jerry Stiller is like, oh, you know who's better than Jerry Stiller? Now that I'm thinking about it, for the father, is Jeffrey Tambor. That's who's transparent, right?
Yeah.
That's
okay.
Jeffrey Tambor as his husband, but Jeffrey Tambor, maybe even in drag, like not drag, but as trans. So it's like the overbearing Italian mother meets the overbearing trans Jewish mother. So it's like the
I love that.
Like, because they're always feeling like there's so much pressure on their family, you know, and they live right next door. You know what I'm saying?
I love that. You are quick. That's funny.
Amp up the pressure to a whole nother level. Now here's my problem with Everybody Loves Raymond is I didn't particularly love Raymond.
Yeah, he has kind of the whiny little episode. Oops, we lost Tom. Tom dropped all of a sudden. We'll see if he calls back in here. He got hung up. But I'll give you mine real quick. I have, as Ray Ramone, I have John Barrowman, who sadly just got let go and killed off on Arrow. And I have him, I have Josh Gad as his brother. And I have Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda from Frankie and Johnny as lesbian moms. They have two moms for Raymond. And I have for Patricia Heaton's character, I had what's her name from Home Improvement? Gosh, I have her name down. I can't write it. Didn't write it down. Anyway, we'll see if Tom calls back in here. Otherwise, we're going to wrap up here in just a couple seconds for standing on our soapbox. But guys, thanks so much for being part of it. We'll give Tom a couple minutes to call in. We're going to play off in just a couple seconds with his song, More Than Temporary, which is a great ode. If you haven't seen the video yet, you have to look up the video on YouTube. Support independent artists like Tom. He's going to be out at Pride this summer. Steve Grand and Billy Gilman are going out. Be sure to have some fun and enjoy your Pride season. There he goes. Okay, Tom's back in here. We'll pull Tom back in.
Oh, my God, where did I lose you? I totally solved the whole problem.
You solved the whole problem, and we lost you. That's horrible.
I know. So where did I leave you?
Yeah, well, we were going between your two mom people. That's all
okay,
we got.
Okay, so we got our two moms and the Raymond and his wife. I'm going to make them a gay couple, and I'm going to mess up the races too. You know Donald Glover from Community and Atlanta, and he just did.
I love him.
He's also Childish Gambino. So he is Raymond, right? So he's kind of like trying to manage this whole situation and trying to deal with all this shit. And
right.
I'm taking his cohort from Community. Did you ever watch Community? I don't know this actor's name actually,
yeah.
Unfortunately. But his cohort in Community was Abed, the Indian gentleman.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
And they had like a bromance going on, but we just turned that bromance into like an actual romance.
And then, I love that.
Then they're raising their children. So it's like this like interracial gay couple who's kind of chill and dorky and fun, you know, and then looming over them very largely is their overbearing Italian mother with their overbearing trans Jewish mother. That's my crazy scenario.
You are quick on that too, Greg. And who'd you put for the quirky big brother for that Robert character? Yeah.
That's a really good question. Gosh, I feel like I did so much already.
That's all right. You were so quick on the others. I'm impressed that you got the other four. I put Josh Gad, who was LeFou on the recent Beauty and the Beast, who I love from Broadway. Because he's such a goofy character to begin with. Someone is really goofy.
That. Yeah, as the big brother. Yeah, it would have to be.
Yeah.
It would have to be somebody like super, super goofy. Because I feel like the Donald and Abed would be like overwhelmed all the time. Like you'd have to have some sort of like comedic relief, like somebody that's just really very funny all the time. Gosh, I'm trying to think of who it would be. I feel like it would have to be a woman, though, because I feel like out of the four roles, we have two men.
You
can
have a big sister.
Woman.
We can switch it up to a big sister.
Oh,
that's a good idea.
Yeah. Who's that hilarious woman who does all the movies that I can't remember her name? And she was on the show with the Chicago police officer. What is her name? Why is she like the most famous person in Hollywood right now?
Oh, McCarthy?
No. Melissa McCarthy. yeah, she would be hilarious because she, again, she doesn't look like any of the other people.
Exactly. She would be funny.
Such a messed up family.
I want to cast movies with you, my friend. That's amazing. I love that. All right. Well, we're running out of town here. Give everyone where they can follow you, where they can find your music and follow you on social media, because you do have some great social media stuff that you're always posting.
Well, thank you. I am Tom Goss Music everywhere. So it's TomGossMusic.com or Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at Tom Goss Music. It's pretty simple. That's me.
Well, thank you for standing on my soapbox, Tom Goss. It's been an amazing time. I hope you had a little fun.
I had a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
And you're going to play some soccer, which you love playing soccer. You have a big match tonight. Is that true?
We're in the finals of weekday indoor Hollywood division. So you can tell the stakes are very high. But we made the finals. So we played the playoffs, and I'm getting a little too old to be playing soccer, especially indoor 2 days in a row. So I'm just – my goal for tonight is to not fuck my body up. That's pretty much my goal.
There you go. You have to be in fine shape to get to Pride. Tell Michael – it's a good excuse for a massage. I mean, tell Michael, it's like, honey, I'm sorry. I've just been so beat up. I'm really going to need a massage the next couple nights.
That's my job. I do all the pressing and the scratching. I never really – I'm bad at asking for things. So
you
right.
are. That's,
yeah.
Well, I'm sure he's very appreciative. But that is so cool. Have a good time tonight. Hope you guys win. Stay on the line for me. We're going to go ahead and play out with Tom's current More Than Temporary. Can't wait to see. Keep your eyes out for the new Make Your Own video that he's putting together here.
It's called Click,
amazing.
By the way. It's called Click. Yeah.
Huh?
It's called Click.
Clips.
Click. C-L-I-C-K.
Oh, okay, Click. Okay. All right, so look for Click. Thanks so much for joining us. Stay on the line. Guys, we'll see you next week. We'll be standing on our soapbox one more time with the great Jeff Donnell. Have a great rest of the week. Happy Pride, everyone.
Okay. That was fun.
Yeah.
Can I get a picture of you?
In this outfit?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just for some skin. It's very cute.
How are you? I'd love to see you again.
I have to go to work.
It's a beautiful day, San Francisco. This is KHJ Radio 7. And do you smell that? That's love in the air. Did you know that there are over 34,000 LGBT couples in the Bay Area alone? This one goes out to Pat and Loretta celebrating 30 years together. Congratulations, Pat and Loretta. We think this song says it all. Here's Tom Goss with More Than Temporary.
One more down. 14 hours. Breathe aloud the simplest sound of you. All this could be loud. It feels like it's something more than temporary. Oh, just waking up, more than the sun that creeps this Sunday morning now. Fading rift, lost.
Sunday morning, oh, this could be love. It feels like it's summer.